listening to The Circle Day on Resonance 104.4 FM. Welcome, listeners. Ashes and Diamonds Theatre Company are presenting a new translation of Caligula by Albert Camus. The Elevator Gallery will be hosting the play in Hackney Wick from the 22nd of March to the 21st of April. In the studio, we have three guests. We have Simon Reuben White, director of Elevator Gallery. Hello.
Hello.
We have Mark Wright, director of Ashes and Diamonds Theatre Hello. Company. I haven't finished yet. And he's the director of Caligula. Hi. and Simon Lee from the Albert Camus Society UK.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Me as well.
Oh, sorry. I forgot. We only met
Billy
like 5 seconds ago. What was
Billy AB?
AB, and you're doing the set.
Yeah,
basically.
I'm the set designer.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so let's start with Simon Lee. Albert Camus. He's written many things. Let's talk about Caligula, because this is what the play is about. So do you want to say?
Okay, then. Caligula was Camus' first play, and it was a play that he worked on really his entire writing life. And something that we know from Camus' studies is that the original play that he wrote as a young man changed and evolved. The characters changed, the plot changed, and very much the message of the play changed over time as Camus himself changed his opinions on what he thought about the world, metaphysically and politically, and things that had happened around him at the time. So it's a play that is always relevant, because the main questions of Caligula that are asked are questions that have yet to be resolved. And one of the most exciting things about these questions is whether or not they can be resolved. And so it's highly appropriate today that we have a new staging of Caligula by the Ashes and Diamonds Company to reflect the way things are today, several decades on from Camus.
Yep. The philosophy of free thinking really appeals to me and this show. Can you tell us more?
Well, one of the distinctive features of Camus' work is that he never allied himself with any particular group. I mean, one of his many criticisms of his contemporaries was that they allowed their allegiances with political organisations to affect how they spoke and when they spoke and their freedom to speak. One of the things that we often hear about today quite a lot is the idea of political correctness. And back when Camus was writing and speaking, political correctness was a main feature. It was like pure political correctness in the fact that what was politically incorrect at the time was to say anything that could assist your political opponents. And with people taking sides, either taking Soviet communism and the USSR or capitalism and the USA, people were very reluctant to say anything that might help the other side. And so thinkers on the left would be very wary of criticising events that were happening in Soviet Russia. And people who were critical of capitalism but anti-communist were very reluctant to criticise things that were going on in America. And so Camus really paid the price for not aligning himself with any particular cause. I mean, he went where the people were, but he always stayed true to himself. And he got in a lot of trouble, and there was the big controversy over the rebel. And he's always ran the risk of being viewed through the lens of history, which was a way that, which was something he was very much against, the use of history to judge whether or not something's right or wrong. I mean, today, very briefly, since we've seen the collapse of communism, a lot of people are saying, oh, Camus was correct in what he was saying. But the judgment that they're using is events that have transpired through history. One of the most interesting things about Caligula is that we see a political society that is apolitical. I mean, nothing Caligula does makes any political sense whatsoever, which is like he doesn't do anything to appease the the patricians. He does nothing to appease the people. In fact, he seems to go out of his way to annoy everyone. And I mean, I'll ask Mark what his opinion is on this.
Caligula's use of power.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
precisely. I've always been interested in Caligula as a political play. I think my first contact with the play was, or the first time I'd heard of it, was in a book by Hunter S. Thompson. It's called Better Than Sex, where he was on the Clinton campaign trail in 1996 and beyond. And there's a quote from within that book where he mentions the play Caligula, and he talks of it as if it's the most important play about modern politics. That's been written in the 20th century. I always used to get it confused with the Tinto Brass film. And really, when you see that film, it's very difficult to see how you could think that's the most important play about politics in the world. But when I finally discovered the Camus version, then it sort of revealed to me what he was talking about.
Although I would say that Helen Mirren fans would be better off with the Tinto Brass.
Yeah, they probably would. We'll try and get some naughtiness into ours as well. But you know,
Mark, what compelled you to do the play?
Okay, my first contact with the play was in 2003 when I saw the Donmar Warehouse version, sort of fairly famous version with Michael Sheen. At that time, the David Krieg had adapted the production for. The Tony Blair era, so it was very much commenting on the Iraq War, and it was very much commenting on stealth taxes and the New Labour project, really. So it had already been adapted from the 1938 text talking about fascism, and also the 1958 text later, where he was commenting sort of on his own work and how that had been affected by the Second World War. So it had already moved into a different modern period of politics at that time. Now, what I felt is with the Occupy movement at the moment and the worldwide recession, the Arab Spring, that things are very much changing again. And we're in a completely different world now, really, to the Iraq War and those concerns. So when I was looking at the David Grieg version, thinking of doing a production of Caligula, I came to the realisation that really that was for its time. And again, the play needed to change and needed to be adapted again to fit the new concerns. And it just didn't seem right to be satirising Tony Blair when we have the Bullingdon Club to get our teeth into these days. So, basically, I'm compelled to do it to try and comment on the absurdities of the current political situation that I see around me. It got to a point where I've seen too much of that and I wanted to put it into a play, and this seemed like the right play to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Simon, let me bring you in at the end there. What interested you to put on your first theatre production in Elevated Gallery?
Partly just the challenge of doing a theatrical production in an art gallery, because it's not kind of the done thing. But Mary came to me in October, like when we had the Ben Wooderson show, and she just said, like, we got this idea of using your space, and do you know, like, any artists to kind of help with the sets and stuff? And I suddenly had this kind of image in my mind, because I knew Billy and I could see how it could work. And I knew there was sort of notoriety around the kind of the production, and it had a kind of, you know, because of the kind of 70s film, it had this kind of like reputation. And Elevator's always kind of shown stuff that's kind of slightly off the wall and a little bit absurd. Yeah, it seemed like a good choice, and
we seemed absurd enough to
they met the credentials. Yeah,
okay. The people that are not familiar with Camus, they wouldn't know what that means, but I found that funny. The absurd.
Oh yeah, the absurd. Yes, it is a big. I mean, Simon might be able to tell me more about this.
But I can vouch for him. That was a funny comment. Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, there we are. Billy,
hi.
You are responsible for the set.
Yeah.
What can audiences look forward to? What have you got in store?
Well, it's going to be a pretty wild scene. We've got hella cardboard palm trees. Everything's made out of cardboard. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be kind of coming out of the ceiling. Millions of flashing lights, smoke machines, strobe lights, holograms, lasers, party poppers.
Holograms, definitely.
Everything's made out of cardboard, but it's going to be kind of giant, and immersive. The audience is going to be seated kind of within the set.
Wow. And Simon, with the ethos of Elevated Gallery, you want like new, fresh kind of ideas, don't you?
That's always been the idea behind the gallery, is to kind of promote kind of emerging new artists who've got they're beating their own path, if you know what I mean. They're going their own direction.
Funky adventure.
Totally, yeah. And it just seemed like a really good thing to do. And also, I'd just been reading Myth of Sisyphus, and so that kind of was into Camus a bit at the time anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah. Simon Lee, tell us more about Camus.
What would you like to know?
Okay, so what got you into him?
Well, I got into Camus like many people get into serious thinkers, sort of at a sideways step from something else that they're studying. I mean, there never is... Camus says in The Myth of Sisyphus that absurdity is born on the street corner, and it's not a... There's no particular sort of road to Damascus moment where the scales fall from your eyes and you're suddenly tuned into Camus. I mean, it's quite a boring story how I got into it, but I'll tell you privately later. But... One of the things that that interested me greatly about Camus was the fact that he is situating himself maybe in the middle or maybe outside of prevailing ideas. There is a religious aspect to it, not in a sort of Christian or Catholic kind of, or indeed Judaism or Islam or any other religion you care to think of. There is he asked religious questions from an atheist point of view, which I found fascinating to start off with, and I pursued it from there. I mean, one of the critiques that Camus has, and he's not alone in having this, I mean, you'll find this in Vogelin and others, is that he critiques a Gnostic idea that the world is somehow bad. It's been created by, if you're religious, it's been created by some kind of malevolent, God, or it's just bad in and of itself, and that we need to escape from this. And this is something that Camus was entirely against. And it's something that you see in the in Christian religions, that the world is bad, it's confusing, we don't understand it, and we need somebody like Jesus Christ to come along and tell us how we can understand the world and then escape from the world or change the world so that it is a completely and utterly different place.
Or Caligula, in fact.
Or Caligula. I'm coming on to that, Mark, don't worry.
Any Nietzschean superhero.
you've also got the Marxist point of view that Camus was criticising, where they replaced gods with history, and they say the world's a bad place, it doesn't work, it's unintelligible, but we can find a way out of it and totally transfigure it. If you look at the parallels, you've got Jesus Christ is the Messiah, or the proletariat, or the political party, the Communist Party is the Messiah. Christians are looking for the end of days and kingdom come. The Marxists are looking for the withering away of the state and pure communism. Along the way, you get an ethic whereby anything you do to bring about God's kingdom on earth or to bring about the withering away from the state becomes morally justified. It is, in fact, the standard that you use to judge behaviour. And you can use it in a nihilistic way, such as the Nazis used it and the state communists used it, to justify killing anyone, even your own friends, if that brings the end closer. Or it's been used to justify, again, killing anyone, even your own friends, if that brings about...
If you have to.
..the religious freedoms.
I'm taking a bit.
But we saw something similar in the Cuban with Fidel Castro in Revolutionary Justice. It doesn't matter who owns a farm, what he believes and whose side he's on. If the burning down of that farm brings about the revolution, then that's a good thing. Camus was very wary of this, and The Whole of the Rebel is a critique of this idea. And Caligula himself, what he tries to do in his... I'm going to bring Mark in a minute. Mm-hmm. His desire to take the moon... To have the moon in his hand is his desire to have the impossible. What he's looking for is to achieve the impossible, and by doing so, actually transfiguring himself and the world around him, which is it's a complicated metaphysical idea that I'll leave Mark to explain to the listeners.
Thank you for that. Yeah, the idea of the impossible. Yes, he's trying to to bring the impossible into the world. I think Caligula's largely doing this because he's mad. Although, of course, it does link with Camus' philosophy as well. I mean, it's interesting what you're saying about Camus fitting into a sort of Gnostic and Christian ethic about everything being basically evil, because this is one of the sentiments that Caligula actually reiterates in the play quite a lot. Is that he personally believes himself that the whole world is evil, so he finds it quite easy to actually cause harm to it in the attempt to turn it into something good. He doesn't mind attacking things in the world because he doesn't really seem to identify with them very much.
If I could just quickly interject, it's the similar thing that we see in the film The Matrix.
Yeah.
Where they see the world around them as not the real world. It's created by an evil entity. And therefore you can shoot and kill people with impunity.
Yeah, precisely. And if
I can The Matrix is cool.
Yeah, it is. It is a cool film. It gets rapidly less cool as it goes along. But the first film's definitely good.
I thought the three was the best one.
Matrix. I
can we have some
disagree.
Order, please?
Anarchy is order.
Exactly. I really like you.
I thought this was supposed to be an anarchist program.
It is. We can talk about Bakunin if you want, but
next show, I'll save you for that. I know. Continue on.
But yeah, it's true. It's true. There's this element of the Matrix, like reality that's being created that he's trying to oppose. It's just that reality existed at some point in history, and that's the difficult thing with Caligula, is that he doesn't exist in a point of fiction. He's actually also a historical character, which is the thing which is disturbing about him, because otherwise you could treat him like a Hamlet, you could treat him as an amusing comedic character, but the fact of the matter is he did these things. So you do then start to have to deal with that, and that makes this play slightly more disturbing than maybe some sort of fictional depictions of dictators such as Macbeth or Coriolanus,
or even Meursault from the Stranger or the Outsider.
Uh-huh, in fact, yeah.
I mean, I think it was Simon Lee in the Camus Journal 2010 that basically said Meursault's an unbelievable character. He can't possibly exist. Whereas the interesting thing about Caligula is that given the right political situation, Caligula could exist. He did exist, and there could be a new. Updated Caligula somewhere on the horizon.
Oh, it sounds like a smart
thing. Tony Blair had a good Simon. Go, but who's coming later?
Cool.
So we're going to continue.
The only thing I was going to say is, it's the same. He is very much related to Meursault, I'd say. And the difference between this is the amount of power that they have. You know, Meursault's a very disempowered character who sort of just allows himself to be led by the world, whereas Caligula feels the need to lead because he has no other choice, really.
It's all really fascinating. I like how relevant it is, and how you fit it into like how we view other people's beliefs. I'd like to know a bit more about that. Could you say a bit more, like about Caligula and Albert Camus himself as because he was rejected by a lot of political parties. Because you know you want to be an individual. You know you have your own ideas. You can't fit that into any kind of box idea. That's the mistake that people make. But I mean, in terms of like theatre production, do you think how do you plan to like portray? Are you gonna like you've obviously adapted it to today?
Oh yes, we've adapted it to
maybe,
today.
Maybe
we can do that. I mean, we're viewing largely Caligula as Camus' philosophical character, rather than bringing him in touch with today. I mean, essentially, the attitude that we're taking towards it is we're using the 1938 version of Caligula, where he's a sort of absurdist hero. The way that we're adapting it to the current situation is by updating the patricians and the political system that they're involved in. So we've got there's quite a lot of sort of spitting image, private eye, political lampooning going on in this play. We've got people that you will recognise, like David Cameron and Boris Johnson and stuff, turning up. Even George Galloway's there in some point. So
he wasn't invited; he just turned up.
He just turned up.
He's a habit of doing that.
he does. He appears as a cat in this. It is actually still taken from Camus. Obviously, he didn't have these kind of things. Actually, Camus was quite vague about the patricians themselves. He didn't really define them very well. I mean, sometimes I think it's because he wasn't really fully completely committed dramatist, as you know, he's a philosopher and a novelist as well. So I don't think he necessarily worked out every single character for the patricians very well. And so that's been the major thing that we've updated with this, to try and bring actual political personalities into it, because we're very, very keen on sort of savaging some political figures in the modern world, really, because it hasn't been done for a long time. I think that satire sort of died out a little bit with New Labour because people lost the appetite for it, and it's almost as if people have forgotten how to do that now.
That spitting image, that's
yeah,
gone.
Precisely, yeah. And I think that's such a big loss, because I really don't think that this government would be surviving at all if spitting image were around to lampoon them. It's just we now have Rory Bremner and stuff like that, so it's a lot softer.
Yeah. You've noticed that during like austerity measures, the arts are always the first to like be cut.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, are you guys like scrimping and saving to like kind of like have this?
Well, the whole set's made out of cardboard.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah,
it's been sourced from Hackney Wick.
So great.
Yeah,
that
we're completely
so cool.
Self-funded with this. We have no funding. A lot of that is actually bubbling under the surface of the play. We've got a lot of satire on the Cultural Olympiad as well going on. Because, I mean, obviously, with Cultural Olympiad, we were expecting to get some money as a theatre company working in London. And we've just found that it's been a bit of a letdown, generally, as an event, whatever it was supposed to be. I don't know, really, but it hasn't transpired to be anything. Hopefully the Olympics will be slightly better than the Cultural Olympics, which don't seem to have done anything at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But
we'll see.
Yeah, at Elevator Gallery, there's outside the window, you can actually see that it's probably one of the best views.
Well, we're literally like a bridge away from the Olympic Park. Like, you can see the whole thing from like the end of the corridor.
Mm, the Colosseum.
Yeah.
How did people get hold of the tickets?
There's a booking line. It's 08444771000, and you can find that from the website Ashes and Diamonds or Elevator. They'll both direct you there.
So it's www.ashesanddiamonds.com
and www.elevatorgallery.co.uk
and www.sumocloud.com. That's my website. That's Billy AB. I'm great. You've got to check it out.
Mark?
Yeah?
Have you got... Would you like to do other Camus plays in the future?
There's a possibility of other Camus plays. Yeah, that's not the not necessarily the first thing we're thinking of. The next play that we're going on to after this, actually, is an adaptation of an Andrzej Wajda Second World War screenplay that was called Canal, which is about the Warsaw Uprising. It's about based on Orpheus in the Underworld. In fact, the play that we've actually got is called The Underground. It's based on Orpheus in the Underworld, and it's been extracted from this Andrzej Wajda film. It's set in the last days of the Warsaw Uprising, as the people that rose up were being abandoned by the Soviet state and forced to face the Nazis on their own without being supported by anybody. And it basically it deals with the retreat through the sewers of this city that's falling down around people's ears. It's a lot darker and a lot less comedic than Caligula, but that's our plan to go on, what we're going on to next. Camus, I'd love to come back to again at some other point, but it's not this is the main one that I want to do.
Yeah.
And then there's other people that I want to work with, like Barker, and I want to do a bit of Shakespeare and stuff like that as well. So we'll get back around to Camus again after this.
Yeah.
For now.
And with the Camus Society, Albert Camus Society, how did people get involved with that?
Basically, the first step would be to Google Camus Society and then find our website. And the second would be to just send us an email if you want to get involved. I mean, there's a call for papers out if you want to contribute to the Journal of Camus Studies. It's a peer-reviewed journal that's been handled by American brothers at the Camus Society and sisters, Camus Society US. there's 2012 is going to be our year of Camus. There's plenty going on. I mean, there's the Camus play that Mark will tell you when the first day is of the Camus play.
Oh, the 22nd of March.
22nd of March is the first one. We've got the Camus the Caligula opera is coming up in May.
Oh, wow.
Probably won't be as good as the play, will it?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I
never like opera.
No, yeah, neither do I. Singing when you should sopranos. Be speaking. not into it.
No, but I'm sure, you know, if it's it might be worthwhile going down if you can snare a free ticket.
They're stealing all our ideas anyway. So.
We've got, if you're interested in Caligula, we've got a new book on Caligula coming out, written by me, so I can tell you it's quite good, very exciting. And just various events going on as the 2012...
Can you tell us about how he died? Because I always found that quite fascinating, the
Yeah, he died. Camus died in a car accident. The car that he was in careered off the road, smashed into a tree, and Camus went out the back window. There's lots of interesting stories.
No, but he had a conversation.
I was prefacing that with the sentence, there's a lot of interesting stories, and then I was going to say what the interesting stories were.
Sorry.
But, basically, while they were in the car, one of the final conversations they had was, it was Camus and his friend were talking about, it was Camus, his friend's wife, his friend's daughter. They were all in the car, and Camus and his friend were talking about what was happening when they died, and they were suggesting being stuffed and put up in the lounge so that people sort of, they didn't know about Dennis Nielsen, but it was Dennis Nielsen style. They would be sitting there perpetually as stuffed human beings, and his wife was, not Camus' wife, the driver's wife, was saying, oh, the horror, I don't want to hear anything more about it, and that was it, they smashed into a tree. The other interesting fact was that Camus didn't want to go by the car. He didn't like car journeys. He'd previously written that the most absurd way to die was in a car accident. In his top pocket, like in a sort of bad film, he had the ticket, his train ticket that he never got to use. And most interestingly, actually, no, not the most interestingly. I'll say the most interestingly thing on my website. No, I'll say it in a minute. He was... he'd actually written a letter to one of his mistresses saying that he would see her on the Tuesday, bar any accidents on the road. There was an accident on the road, and he never got to meet her. The interesting thing is, for The Circle Day, was the very last piece of work Camus did was an article he'd sent to an anarchist magazine.
Mm.
So you could probably find that online.
Yeah.
Just Google Camus Society.
No, I have a gander. Yeah.
Have you heard the KGB conspiracy theory about
it? Yes, I have. I don't believe it.
You don't? It seemed a bit tenuous to me.
Also, why would they? Why would, there's various conspiracies, and it doesn't make sense why they'd want Camus to be to be killed, since he wasn't really causing as much trouble as anyone else.
Yeah, no.
And
but didn't
he changed his idea. He changed his plans right at the last minute, so they'd have to be really.
Yeah.
A lot of people did blame the driver, and he was a sort of social pariah at the time. Because they said he was driving too fast or whatever, but subsequent analysis has shown that it wasn't his fault. Mm. It was just an absurd accident.
Yeah, it's absurd, yeah.
No, I think that's probably closer to it.
Okay, well, that's all, folks. Try and get tickets for the play. You know how to now. Solidarity with those involved with Occupy in London. It's appalling how our concerns are never heard. We're going to have to shout louder. Till next time, turn on, tune in, and kick off.